I'm glad to be with you. Years ago, when I was quite a bit younger, I visited here, and Jerry was not the preacher here. And I just visited and sat back and listened and enjoyed it. And I had known of a number of people that were here at that time. And it's good to be back to this part of the world. I'm originally from the Seattle area, but I spent a long time in the Deep South and also in the great state of Texas. But I'm not a Texican yet. They're trying to get the paperwork done on me so I can be, but I'm not quite yet. Good to be with you. We're going to talk about a few things this morning, and they're not new things. These are things that you know. And when you talk about transformation, you understand that the key idea of transformation is that word metamorphosis, which simply means to change. It's a change. And so, just like the little worm turns into the butterfly, change occurs. Now, I would tell you that not all change is good. Sometimes things that are good go bad, like your milk. It changes. But what we want is for something that's not so good to become good. And that's the metamorphosis we're looking for. And so we're going to start with a story that you're very familiar with. You may not recognize the title of this, but it's the Two Wayward Boys. In the 15th chapter of the book of Luke, starting in verse 11, it says, "And he said, a certain man had two sons." Now, here's a man with two sons. Most of the time, you think about this as the parable of the prodigal son. But if you look real close, it says he had two sons. And really, the story is about two sons. But here in chapter 15, we're in what someone has styled the lost and found department of a good newspaper. Because there are three things that are lost, and those same three things are found. You have a sheep that wanders off into the hills. You have a coin that is lost in a house. And then you have a son that goes into a far country. Really, what Jesus is trying to do here is talk a little bit about these ideas. If I can get this to move. The tragedy of being lost, which is, of course, separation. And then secondly, the joy of being found. Each time, the joy that is spoken about in this passage has reference to something that has changed. The lost has been found. And the illustration is, or rather the recommendation of Jesus is, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of heaven over what? One sinner that repented. There's joy before God over one sinner that repents. They were lost, and now they're found. Well, I was telling you about these various things that were lost and found, and perhaps you haven't thought about it this way, but really, what we style the parable of the sower, the two wayward boys, is a combination of those first two parables. Think about this. The sheep, where is it lost? Far away, up on the mountain. And there is some searching that is done till it's found and brought home. The coin is lost in the house. I would tell you that the younger brother, the wild child that went away into the far country, he is like that sheep. But the other son is just as lost because of his attitude, and he stayed at home. Jesus is trying to make a point about some Jewish problems that they are facing. Let me just show you a couple more things here. We're talking about how sin separates people. In verses 1 and 2 of chapter 15, it says, "Now all the publicans and sinners were drawing near unto him to hear him. And both the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them." What we need to understand is that there are two types of sin. There's outward sins, and there's inward sins. In this story, the two boys, you have somebody that has an inward sin, has a bad attitude towards his brother. He's jealous of him, especially when he gets something from the father that he doesn't think he deserves. Dad always loved him more. Kind of Smothers Brothers kind of show here. Mom liked you more. Well, the outward sin, of course, is what the younger boy did by leaving and wasting the inheritance of riotous living. That's the outward sin, but there's also inward sin. And what Jesus is trying to do is actually deal with this mess with the Pharisees and how they're criticizing him for being with the publicans and the sinners. He's eating with them. Both have issues. Both need to change. And that's really what this parable is about. But we're going to jump right into it here as we consider this story of the two boys. And we start with the one boy leaving home for the far country. It says, and he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of the substance that falls to me. And he divided them his living. Notice carefully what I've underlined. He divided to them the living. We always think sometimes that it's only divided to one, but no, the father gives them both what they deserve right then, or what the inheritance is. They both have it. That's how the father... That doesn't really show up on there, does it? Oh, well. New fangled play. I like it, though. He divided the living to both of them. That's why the father considered the other boy, everything that is mine is thine, because that's all that's left. The boy wasted his. Really, the older boy runs the farm now. Anyway, he divided unto them the living, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey to a far country. And there he wasted his substance with riotous living. What does prodigal mean? Wasteful. You probably wonder what prodigal meant. Everybody says prodigal son, but we think that's sin or something. No, it means wasteful. That's why he's called prodigal. He wasted his substance on riotous living. Let's talk about this far country. Where is the far country? Well, in the story, it's a different land. But for us, did you know that sometimes people who rebel against God or change for the worse, the far country may be a place or an attitude. It could be the way they're thinking. It could be like these people. Matthew chapter 15, verses 8 through 9. These people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Where is it? Far country. Somewhere in the recesses of their mind, they stop thinking about God and caring about God. See, that may be the far country for some people. But in vain do they worship me, teaching as their doctrines the precepts of men. See, they substituted something in the place of serving Almighty God. They're far from, it's a far country. You know, far country could be your peers or your friends. Let's think about a few verses. Proverbs 13:20, he that walks with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Be careful who you run with. Be careful who you hang with. This is a good lesson for young people. They can take you far away from who you're supposed to be. Take you far away from God. Once again, Proverbs 1 verse 10. Actually, if you read all of Proverbs 1 there, it's rather interesting about what God is warning. In the personification of Mr. Wisdom, he says, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, we'll wait for some people, we'll lay for blood, and when they come, we'll beat them up, and we'll take their money, we'll be rich, we'll just have so much fun. Don't listen to that. If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Take you further away than you're supposed to be. It can lead you away from God. Anyway, that could be our far country. between your ears, or maybe it's between the ears of your friends. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33. You can probably quote this, but you don't have to. It's on the overhead. Be not deceived. Evil companionship corrupts good morals. Right? If you're with the wrong people, you're going to become corrupted. Not me. Really? You know, in our Bible classes for little kids, we have all sorts of little songs. We're trying to train them. Maybe you remember some of those songs, like "Be careful, little eyes, what you see. Be careful, little ears, what you hear. Mouth, what you say." Well, what I see and what I hear and what I say usually has something to do with who I hang with. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. That's a truism. It's axiomatic. Psalms 1:1. Here's the other side of it. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scoffers. If you kept reading, but his delight is the law of the Lord, and on that law does he meditate day and night. This man will be like a tree planted by the streams of water, and whatever he does will prosper. The point is, he doesn't walk with wicked people. He doesn't stand with them. He doesn't sit with them. That's a progression. You know, it usually starts real slow. You start walking with somebody. You may be going the same direction. Well, if you start talking to them, they may want to talk to you a little bit, and you stop walking to some place, and you're standing, and then pretty soon you're sitting with it. That's the progression of how a person falls from God. He walks with the wrong people, then he stands with the wrong people, and then he stays with the wrong people. That's a far country. I want you to know that what righteous living is a waste. Back to our text, chapter 15, verse 13. The younger son gathered all together and took his journey into the far country. And there he wasted his substance with riotous living. Again, wasteful. Here's what his brother said a little bit later in the text. As he's trying to explain to his father how it's just not fair, he says, but when this thy son came, who has devoured thy living with harlots. Okay, that's what the riotous living was. No longer under dad's supervision, and so he just doing whatever he wants. Whatever he's sent to do. He's running with the wrong crowd. Well, this trouble gets to be real trouble, and it brings longing for home. You know, most people who know that something's wrong think that they'll just do it this time, or maybe We talk ourselves into doing the wrong things because, you know, I've been really good. I deserve this. I'm only going to do it one time, right? Just one time. No good. Well, he's out there doing all these things, and guess what? All those things that were wasteful cost money. He didn't have any more money. And then something happens he didn't plan on. And when he spent all there arose a mighty famine in that country, and he began to be in want. In other words, like a few years here, the houses all went under. People lost their money. People who had invested money, the bottom fell out of the stock market. Were you all expecting that when it happened? Were you prepared? Well, see, that happens in various places. This guy says, it'll be all right. He didn't save for a rainy day. He didn't have any money stored up. He didn't plan for tomorrow because he was living for today. He spent everything. And then he's in want. And guess what? He went and joined himself to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his field to feed the swine. You know, he was in want and nobody would share with him. They were glad to take his money, but they wouldn't give him any. So now he's out there feeding swine, Jewish swine, feeding pigs. Amazing. And he would have fain filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. But when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father have bread enough and to spare, and I perish here with hunger? That's an interesting thing. It says he came to himself. Coming to himself, I would suggest to you that sin is often temporary insanity. Have you thought about that? I mean, if he comes to himself, it must be that he was away from himself. You can't come to yourself unless you're away from yourself. He snaps out of it. He was under the spell of the bright lights in the big city and being the big shot with the money. And now he's in the pig pen. He said, you know, at home, at least I had something to eat all the time. And so he snaps out of it. He says, I'm not thinking right. I've got to change my direction. And here's the important part. He's humble enough to go home. How many people, when they finally come to the place where they admit, you know, I was the wrong person here, still have too much pride and won't go home? This boy is humble enough to go home and admit what he's done because he needs help. You know, if we really believed that whether or not we serve God or not has eternal implications, we would do whatever we needed to do to be right with God. And if it means going home, what I mean by going home is going back to the faith that we've left and trashed for some other zippity-doo-dah experience, we do it. The question is, do we really believe that what God says is really real? See, this is stark reality here in this illustration of the boy in the pig pen. And so, although it's going to be embarrassing, the good thing was he's humble enough to go back home. And he even practices what he's going to say. He says, I will rise and go to my father, and I'll say unto him, Father, I've sinned against heaven in thy sight. I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. I don't even deserve to be your son anymore, but I just want to live in your house because at least you'll take care of me. Because you take care of your servants, I'll be a servant. Here's something I want to encourage you to think about. God may not change your circumstance. Everybody wants their circumstance. You know, if I could just get ahead a little bit, if I could get a little bit more money, or if I could get that other job. You ever think that way? When I get it all straight, then I'll be able to maybe do some other things. Well, the fact is, those kinds of deals are not things that God works out with most people. He's calling you from where you're at to make conscientious, direct choices. And so what I'm saying is God may not change your circumstance, but he'll do this. He can change you. And then what can you do? Well, you can change your circumstance. Think about that. God will not do for you what you can do for yourself. Now, he will encourage you, and he will teach you, and he will lead you, and he will guide you so that you can help yourself. Oh, what a novel idea in this society. I can actually help myself. That's right. With God's help and his word. And sometimes part of what this is that God takes away our excuses by allowing us to lose most things that we think are very important. And then we have a moment of clarity like this boy. He said, what in the world am I doing? I need to go back home. Yeah, we're talking about transformation, all right? That's what that is. Changing into something else. Changing for the better. Well, let's talk about the coming home. This is a fascinating story. And he arose and came to his father. You know, there a few years ago down in Texas, there was a fellow that was preaching on the same subject, and he gave a title which I really liked for his sermon. It was called, Giving a Pig a Permanent Wave. Of course, here's what he meant by that. leaving the pig and going back home to dad. So he rose and came to his father. And when I got far away off, his father saw him, was moved with compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto his father, remember he's rehearsed this, Father, I sinned against heaven in thy sight. I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. He didn't get to the part, make me a servant, because the father interrupted him. Notice what the father did. But the father said to his servants, bring forth quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. He can't even get to the part about being a hired servant. And bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and make merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Well, they're going to celebrate. Here's what we have. We have a reunion and a restoring. Child is apart from the father. He mistreated the father. He took advantage of the father. He got what he wanted, but then he realized that his father was probably right all along. He came back hat in hand. The father accepted him as he left, as his son. There is a restoring part going on here. Notice this. In Galatians 6, verse 1, it says, brethren, even if a man be overtaken in any trespass, ye who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, looking to thyself, lest thou also be tempted. There's a restoring of people. I think we're in that business. We're in the restoring business. We're in the restoration business. See, here's what I believe. I don't believe that any person is born a sinner. I don't believe you inherit sin from anybody. But at some point, both you and I made choices that were wrong. We sinned. In doing that, we alienate ourselves from God. What does God want us to do? We sing the song, come home, right? We come home. And as we come home, there's a restoring. In fact, in the initial thought of the gospel, what do they call it? What did Jesus call it when he's talking to Nicodemus about how a person is saved? What was that called? It's called a rebirth. Oh. Going back to the family. Born anew. Born again. Born from above. If you want the other illustration, it's you were dead. And you die with Christ, you reenact the death, burial, and resurrection. It's a resurrection. Whether you want to talk from birth element or resurrection element, that's what it is. It's a remaking. It's a starting over. It's a restoring. Now, particularly, we have Christians under consideration in this passage. And did you know that Christians sometimes mess up? You didn't think that happened, did you? Oh, I've been around the United States. It does happen. Yeah. Not as rare as you might think. Anyway, what needs to happen with that? We need people to care enough about them that are, what's the phrase there? Ye who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness. I think we have the wrong people doing the restoring in local fellowships. Sometimes. We don't have spiritual people looking for spiritual people for spiritual answers. You have a problem with your marriage, who do you go to? Well, someone that had a problem in their marriage. Maybe that's not the best person to go to. I'll tell you where you need to go. You need to go to a person that has been faithful to their spouse and their wife, and they've lived and they have a great marriage. You go talk to spiritual people that spiritually have been true to their spouses and have good families. That's who we need to talk to. Society wants you to talk to everybody that messed up. Bad idea. Go to the one that didn't.
Do you really want to learn to be a banker from someone that embezzled from the bank? No, you don't. So you have someone that messed up, some way or another. What do they need to do? Well, they need to come home, and then we need some people like this father who's very loving. And he did some restoring. What kind of restoring are we looking at here? Well, there's a reconciliation. The son came back. He's back home. And then there was this reclothing and reinstating. I asked myself the question, what did the father see when the boy came back? What did he see? He saw something that he didn't see previously. See, when his son left, he left with money. When his son left, he had nice clothes. I'm thinking his son had shoes. And his son had a ring on his hand, maybe the signet ring of the family. And you know what? His cheeks were full. But how did he come back? No shoes on his feet. Walking in rags that smell like pig. No ring on his finger. Off with him. Quick. Put a new robe on. Put shoes on his feet. Put the ring. This is my son. He's reinstated. He's not called second class by the father. Isn't that powerful? The point is, that's what God wants to do with us in this story. He wants to reclothe us, reinstate us. He wants to rejoice with us, and that's what they did. They went off and they had a little party. They killed this fatted calf, and they were dancing and eating, and everybody's happy. Why? Because the son was gone, and the father was afraid he was dead, and now he's home, and everything's wonderful, right? Now there's a little more to the story. Let's see what happens. Not everyone was happy. You know, in a children's class one time, the question was, you know, who didn't like that the prodigal came home? The little boy raised his hand. I think it was the fatted calf. And I think that's probably obvious. But there was somebody else that didn't like it too much. Let's see. There we go. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called him one of the servants and inquired what these things might be. And he said unto him, thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he's received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. And his father came out and entreated him. Oh, see, not everybody's happy. This one's angry. He's out doing his job. He's been the responsible boy. You know what's interesting sometimes? I know this doesn't work this way all the time, but I've noticed that in the majority of cases, it's usually the younger one that has more difficulties than the older one. I know there are exceptions. I've seen that too. But a lot of times, the younger one kind of drifts off and the older one tries to be the responsible one. That's kind of the story you have here. Anyway, he's mad. Father has to go out and talk to him. But he answered and said unto his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, and I never transgressed a commandment of thine. Why do you always like the baby in the family more than me? I'm a good son. And yet somehow when you look at him, you get this twinkle in your eye that you never got when you looked at me. Is that familiar? You give him, you never gave me anything. Oh, how bad is that? And yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might nightmare with my friends. It's just not fair, Dad. And when this thy son, not my brother, your son, who hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou killest for him the fatted calf. I was looking at that fat calf and I thought I should get it. But you saved it up for him. Huh. And he said unto him, Son, thou art ever with me, and all that is mine is thine. And we talked about that. He split the inheritance between the two boys. That's a true statement. Everything that's left is this boy's. And then he says, but it was meet to make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. You see, there are certain things that are more important than competition. It would be a terrible thing, and I'm sure this never happens here, you've never seen it anywhere, that Christians compete with one another for the attention of certain folks. Never happens, does it? Sadly, it does. A few years ago, I was doing a lesson in Tennessee. I liked the lesson simply because I had what I thought was a great prop. I don't have the prop with me, but I'll tell you what I have. I had two bags, and in both bags, it were round things. And one of the bags, I would hold it up to the speaker, and I'd shake it. And what you would hear was click, clack, click, clack, click, clack, click, clack, click, clack. Noisy little guy. And then the other bag I'd take like this, and I'd shake it. And all you hear is kind of a... just real soft, gentle. Let me tell you what was in the bags. The noisy bag was marbles. The other bag was grapes. Why do I tell you that? Because sometimes, unfortunately, in local fellowships, people are more like a bag of marbles than a bag of grapes. And what do you hear? Click, 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 click. Oh, there's no clicks in churches, are there? This one with that one, and who's going to be important and making their little noise as we go. All over the place. But, then there's these marbles. Or, excuse me, the grapes. When you get the grapes, you know what happened when I did that for a while? They got kind of soft and mushy. Which is kind of neat. They kind of blended together, and then this juice came out, which is pretty sweet. I will tell you that that is the wine of fellowship. It's not abrasive, but it's the sweet-tasting wine of people getting together and needing each other and spending time with each other and sharing joys and failures. I think that's what church is supposed to be about, isn't it? It's not about who's the classiest and who's the cutest and, you know, who gets what, and you like him more than, you know. Again, it sounds like Smothers Brothers. But sometimes we forget what church is about. It's about serving God. Finding fellowship and health and healing in those who love God just as much as we do. And because they love God, we love them. And because we love God, they love us. How wonderful is that? If nothing else, that's a good definition of church. Okay, quickly. Who was the real victim in this story? Everybody looking for a victim? Well, it's the father that was the victim. Both boys acted out with reference to their father. The younger boy didn't think he needed the father. The older boy thought the father owed him something, even though he gave him everything he had. The real victim is the father in this story. The father loved both wayward sons. He loved them both. Do you believe it's possible for God to love someone sitting next to you as much as they love you? I hope so.
I hope if you're a parent that you can love one child as much as another. Don't make any distinction between children. I know I have a couple kids. And there are some that kind of get a little close with you. My younger son, just a little imp, and he was so cute and everything. And my daughter, you know, she always was looking for, trying to get attention, type thing. And you got to be aware of what both of them need. Actually, my son probably needs more whippings. My daughter needs more attention, probably, you know. But they're good kids. They're off, married, you know, living different places now. Don't have any kids of their own. I'm thankful for that. I won't mess that one up. But the fact is, he loved both children. God loves all of us. He's looking for the best for each one of us in whatever circumstance we're found. But they mistreated their father. How often do we mistreat our Father in heaven? Then my question is, can you identify with one of the sons? What did we have? We had the wild child. But the wild child had a tender heart. I think that's what you see. And that happens sometimes. The ones that are the most boisterous and seem to get more trouble, they break down easier. And then we had the compliant child. Did everything Dad said, that he really was kind of had a cold heart. He's more calculating. He had some real issues, daddy issues. And so the question is, which are we? Are we like any of them? You know, the real story here has to do with how we can find joy. How can we find joy? And the secret to joy, according to this storyline, is finding that which is lost. I wonder sometimes why Christians don't have more joy. And then I remember that passage over in 2 Peter chapter 1. And in that passage, it's talking about putting on certain attributes. We call them the Christian graces. And Peter says, if any lack these things, if any lack these, he is blind, seeing only what is needed, having forgotten the cleansing from his old sins. Now that phrase blind is the word for myopic. He's only looking at what's right in front of his face. He's nearsighted. And what he's forgotten is that his sins were cleansed. That's why he hadn't added anything to his life. And maybe the reason Christians don't find the joy that they feel they once had is because they've forgotten what it's like to be lost. Think about that. Maybe what we need to do is remember what it's like to be lost and how terrible it is to be lost. And we need to come home to a Father, and we need to open up our hearts to Him. And we need to seek His face. And we need to seek His blessing. We forget about the most important things because we forget what God has done. To really make our lives better. You know, I'm a number of things today that I wasn't years ago. And I'm not all that smart. I'm not all that clever. You know, I'm getting older. Little aches and pains. All those things come along. But I can be thankful for one thing. And you know what that is? I am not the person I used to be. I grew up. Got a little closer to God. Still working to get there. It may not be everything I ought to be, but I'm better than I was. I think most of us could say that, can't we? I'm better today than I was. And if you can say that, then you're on the right track, I think. We're trying to be the right kind of people. One last phrase, and the lesson will be yours. Never allow pride to keep you from loving your brethren. Thank you.
kind of what Jesus was talking about here. The more we try and promote ourselves, the more I think the fellowship and the unity of the congregation dissolves. Because it's not about self-promotion. It's about promoting the faith and promoting Christ. And compliantly and humbly yielding to it and giving our lives for it. Is there any question or anything before we quit? Comments? Am I out of time? I guess I'm out of time. Okay. We'll take this back up then in a little bit.